Okay.
Information Technology Group we were talking about?
Yeah, Ron Quake was the president. I had a good relationship with Ron. Ron never would put anything in writing, either to his boss or anybody else. He just said, no. He always ran his business out of his back pocket, which you can't run a corporation that way. And so I think he probably had some words with his management. And he didn't stay terribly long, but he was there long enough for me to get something started. The first thing I did was to go around to each of our companies and find out what products they had under development, and came back and recommended that a good part of them be dropped. I was then advised at that particular point in time that I didn't understand how the system worked, so I learned something.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. The Information Technology Group, Thyssen Bornemisza, $3 billion corporation, it was a big corporation. They expensed all product development. They capitalized all product development. And they may spread it over 10 years. So if it cost $1 million over 10 years, then each year you'd only have to expense $100,000. Then hopefully at the end of 10 years you had a product that would then start bringing in some money. First thing I found out was that everybody's bonus is dependent upon what happens underneath them. So my boss's bonus depended upon my bonus, and his boss's bonus depended upon his bonus. And if his guy didn't get, if Ron didn't get a bonus, then the guy he reported to didn't get a bonus. Okay? The way it worked. Okay. If we wiped out these product developments, a number of them, that means that the money that had been spent but had not yet been charged would then have to go to the bottom line as an expense that year. And that would have a negative effect on bonuses. So some of those things continued.
Even though that didn't make sense in your view.
It didn't make sense. One of the things that out of my office in Washington that I operate, that I had, we developed with PC. We had a PC. We got a Sun PC, so it was a powerful PC. A computer program. This was in 1982-83 period, so that's 15 years ago. We put up on it, we built it for the use of interior decorators, or for the use of large furniture. Okay? We put everything that they had in color with all the information on stock, on purchase price, on location, everything indexed. All into the computer. Okay. The system itself, we test marketed it with a number of groups in the Washington area, here in the Washington area, and they were delighted with it. It was taken. My headquarters was in New York, Ron Quake's boss was in New York, and that's where the headquarters were. They liked what we were doing. They arranged to have a demonstration before the president of Burlington Mills. Burlington made rugs, All of this we had in there. Okay. The Burlington guy watched this thing, offered my boss's boss $3 million for the system the way it stood. It cost us, only cost us a few thousand dollars to develop the system. My boss says to himself, if this thing is worth $3 million to him, it must be worth a hell of a lot more to me. And so he gets excited about the system. So he takes, the system's now developed. He said, takes it up to New York and said that we will now see if we can't get customers up here in the New York area. It would be like you could take it to Marriott. You know, they build these things all over the place, mm-hmm. and then they can see, they can pick and choose and what have you and so forth. And not only that, the furniture manufacturers, the rug manufacturers, all these people will want to get their stuff in there. You can charge them to put this stuff in there. They, you know, it's a win-win situation. You can charge the people who use it. I mean, it's a win-win situation. I don't know what happened to it, because I was out of the loop at that point. Mm. And they gave it to somebody and said, I knew the guy, I didn't know him very well, but I knew he was an accountant. And he liked to sell stuff, but that's all right, whatever it was. I don't know what happened after that. It died. Mm. It died. They had a $3 million, and it died.
Wow. Mm.
The thing cost me, beside my salary, which wasn't, you know, which wouldn't be charged anything like that, but because I was over him. But it was a part time of a programmer, and some equipment, and a little travel. So in those days, I would be surprised if we spent $25,000 or $30,000 at the most.
And disappeared.
Disappeared. $3 million disappeared.
Well, now, why did you leave this group and go with Research Publications?
Shortly after that, Ron Quake left. And a new guy came in. Yeah, I had no trouble with the new guy, but Thompson had been talking to me, and so I decided I'd go with the Thompson Corporation, and so I left.
And you were only with Research Publications for a short time, is that right?
2 years. I was only with these, I say 2 years. But remember, part of my reason for going with these corporations was to learn.
Uh-huh.
And I learned about all I wanted to learn from this corporation.
Oh, yeah.
And because the people that made the decisions that I inherited were still there. I mean, that wasn't going to, I mean, you know, they hurt that I was going to run into the same thing no matter what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And
what did you learn at Research Publication?
Well, I learned how big business operates.
Yeah. They were much larger group, or a larger group certainly than Saul Herner, where you went next, huh?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, there's no question about that. Mm-hmm. Thompson would be after me. I went to Thompson next.
Oh, I thought you went to Research Publications.
No, I went to Saul last. And I decided I want to go to a small company. And I'd known Saul for years, and Saul made a major contribution, and I thought maybe I could help.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a lot of traveling on these other jobs, but the Thompson was a completely different operating philosophy. Thompson did not believe in developing anything. Thompson, which is most large corporations,
mm-hmm.
most large corporations say, look, if the little guy wants to beat his head on the wall and go ahead and develop it, that's fine. Most of them will.
We'll buy it from you.
And then we buy it from you, and that's exactly what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't the least bit interested in computerizing. Research Publications was big in the patent business.
today was Pat and Son, and primarily in microform, and making copies of that back and so forth. Well, let me tell you, when the PCs were in then, damn it, you better stop with that stuff. So it's going to be searched PC. That's the way it's going to go. I mean, you didn't have to be a genius to figure that one out.
Yeah, right.
And they just didn't want to do anything like that. And so somebody else, they took it away from them.
What was it like working for Herner and Company?
Herner and Company was different. You know, I wasn't developing anything for Herner and Company. Herner and Company, I ran contracts for them. I was a manager. And I knew the government. I knew a lot of people in government. I was a pretty good reference. I know how to write proposals. I hate writing them, but I know how to write them. Because I've been on the other side, and I know what they're looking for.
Yeah.
And so it made it easy. I mean, I know exactly how to target stuff. And Saul left me alone. I did my own thing.
So you managed the contracts that they had gotten?
I managed a number of them that were in my area.
Yeah.
Primarily I managed them. And Paul was very good about it. He says, if you want to do consulting, that's too. So I still had a couple of things I kept going. Mm-hmm. I had some. And I stayed there for a while. And I was consulting for a company that was getting involved in electronic imaging. I didn't know anything about electronic imaging, but I wanted to learn. And so I found an opportunity. They made me an executive vice president, and I learned.
This is the
BIS Corporation.
Right, BIS.
Uh-huh. And I learned that and this was a small company. I think it could have been successful. We had some good software. No, we didn't make it because we had an argument at the board level, and it was operating philosophy. And that's where the funding support came from. And they finally, the guy who was providing most of the funding support said, well, he's from out of town, not in the area. He says, look, I got something else that I can invest my money in. And that was the end of that.
And so then
he writes it off. And then I get involved in telecommunications. I like to learn.
Well, this is the world, or I missed that one too. What's the name of that company?
GlobeNet.
GlobeNet, right. Yeah.
GlobeNet is an art for publications. GlobeNet, we worked for 3 years. I worked for no salary, no nothing. I paid bills out of my pocket. But I was a part owner. We had it made. We wanted to go international. We said, let's not do anything in the U.S. We can't compete with the big guys, which was right. The big companies have trouble overseas because most small companies don't trust them. And trust is important because they've been fleeced before. And American large corporations are very difficult to deal with. This is the way it is, take it or leave it. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's stupid, but that's the way they deal. And they're independent enough and making so damn much money, they don't have to do anything any differently. For example, in the telecommunication business, we found, I would think AT&T have a damn good reputation. Well, it does have a good technical reputation. But many developing countries, we steer away from them. Why? Because when AT&T develops new equipment and puts it into operation here in the U.S., what's it going to do with its old equipment? Okay. Well, these guys aren't stupid, see? And they resent it. it isn't that the old equipment won't work, it will work, but they paid to get the best, and they don't get the best. They get cast-offs, and they resent that. So we proposed to set up as a second carrier in Latin America, a consortium. We were going to use, we planned to use digital, and we planned, and it was all, of course, cellular. We attracted the money, so getting money support for this was easy, provided we could put together a consortium, which we worked 2 years to do.
A consortium of
Latin American telephone companies, mm-hmm, that would do this with us. Most of them were second carriers there, but they didn't have the capital to expand beyond where they were. Mm-hmm. And most of the countries down there don't have the money to expand. And so the way they attract capital is to license and open up, provide frequencies and what have you and so forth. We had that all. We identified, we located companies in these Latin American companies that were making money, that had licenses, that had a large customer base. Okay? We sold them in half a dozen countries. We sold them on agreeing to sell their stock to a new company that would be a consortium of all these companies. Okay? And they would have stock in this large, mm-hmm, company. And they would get capital, mm-hmm, to expand in their countries. In their, there's no question, okay? It took a hell of a selling job to do this, because the Latins don't trust Americans. Canadians is a lot easier. Canadians are no threat to them. Americans have fleeced them in the past. But we had oral agreements, we had written agreements, companies would do it, okay? We had Oppenheimer up in New York, agreed to fund and to raise the money, and they claimed they had the money. Because, you know, they go out to two or three people, they get the money. Because we were talking, and initially we were talking about raising about $30 million. The second, which would be a few months later, would be another $78 million, and the third would be about $300 million. This is big business. This is big business. You only need a little piece of a big thing. Okay? You know, I worked for government. I never made any money. I sunk everything I had into this thing. Okay. So we had... The signing agreement was in our Alexandria offices.
Now, who was down in Latin America doing the selling?
We were selling ourselves. We would go down. My job was more as executive vice president. I did more overseeing everything, because I didn't want to travel. I mean, I've had my share of traveling. I let young guys do this. But the big meetings we would have in Washington, okay? We had all these people agree to come. They come to sign a contract to set up this new company. Okay? And the agreements, all the sub-agreements that we had that would show their stock, and everything was set up. We spent $2 million in legal fees. With two, just Washington legal fees. I'm not talking about the legal fees we had Latin America. Because let me tell you, you can't do any business down there unless you get a local lawyer. We spent a lot of money. A lot. Everything I owned, I threw in. I don't want this. This is...
You don't want me to take this?
Well, you can take it. But I don't want... I'm not going to let you do anything with this thing.
Okay.
Everything I owned, we put into this particular thing here. And I went into debt. Because we were so close. to what happens. I mean, you get to the point of no return. Mm-hmm. I couldn't pull out because it looked like it was a goal. This is no question about it, okay? We get all these people here to sign. We get the money people to sign. We're ready to go, okay? All of us would have had good jobs. All of us would have been paid back what we had already put into the business. All of us would have had a share. It was worth millions. Okay? The president of our company, who is the largest shareholder in our company, so if he decided something, you know, we could put everything we had together, but we couldn't change that, gets up at the meeting and tells about how wonderful this thing is. It was a good talk, there's no question about that. And just said that because of his contribution, he wants to change it so he can get a little bit more. Jesus Christ. I mean, the Latins just walked out, and that was the end of that.
Just he wanted to change it at the last minute, huh?
Greed. Greed. This guy would have become a multi-millionaire because of the numbers of shares and stock that he had. And he wanted this much more. But to the Latins, it had happened to him before, they turned around and they walked out. Oppenheimer, we tried for 4 months to get him back in. Couldn't get them out. Oppenheimer says, you get them in to sign, we have the money. Couldn't get them back in. Somebody's going to do it. Somebody's going to make it go. They're not going to make
it go. So you lost the bundle of money then, huh?
So, but, you know, it was a good try. I did it primarily for my kids. I figured, see, I'd like to be able to leave something to my kids. You know, I educated my kids. I sent my son to graduate school and got his PhD. I didn't have any money. When I had two kids in college for 6 years, I was making $36,000 a year. I mean, I wasn't making any money.
Not easy to manage. Yeah.
No, I wasn't making. So I borrowed on everything that I had. I borrowed on my life insurance. Paid all that back. And then I poured it into this, and I kind of came up with not very much. It's an experience. I learned the telecommunication business. I didn't learn it as a guy that twists wires.
Yeah.
But I know how the business, I learned how the business works. Let me tell you, there's a lot of money going to be made in telecommunications. Yeah. A lot going to be lost.
Yeah.
And you know, people say, well, how long did you expect? I didn't care if we stayed in business 2 days. It didn't make any difference. Somebody was going to buy out. That was worth something.
Yeah.
The same way that you say that the big companies will buy out something you develop, one of them would have bought us out. And they paid to buy you out. That's where you're making money.
Did the company just go totally broke then?
Well, we didn't have anything to give anybody.
Yeah, so you were dissolved, huh?
No. Because we didn't have any money. We spent all of our money. We spent $3 million. Money that we borrowed, and then I took personal. I was paying expenses out. I was executive vice president. I had to pay rent.
Yeah.
I had to pay for a secretary. I mean, I can't ask Kurt to work for nothing.
I hope somebody gave this guy a poke in the nose.
No, he's out there. What good is it going to do?
A little bit of satisfaction.
Anyway. I'll tell you what, I made a mistake. We had two leading law firms that went into debt that took on $1 million. We never paid on a cent. Because they considered it a good deal, and they knew they were going to get their money out, and they'd probably get some shares. And they checked out up and down and back and forth. And I figured, if these guys are satisfied, I guess it's okay. That was a mistake.
They were doing it on contingency sort of reasoning, I guess, huh?
Well, they could afford to write it off.
Yeah.
I can't write it off. I don't have anything to write it off on. That's my problem. And so that was sort of, it was an experience, but you know, I bounce. You know, I don't sit down very long, and I don't sit down at all. I mean, I come right back up again. I came back up again, and then you know, I figure, well, we'll wait and see what happens.
Yeah.
And I'll continue plugging ahead and trying to contribute and help, and if I can help, and maybe something else will come up. I got a lot of know-how that can help people.
Yeah.
I learned how the investment banking business works. I learned a lot. I learned things about business that I never thought was important. Well, because I didn't know anything about business.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and so that's why I say today I can run a business a lot better. I don't think I want to run a business today.
So you're taking on some contracts, but doing them mostly just yourself, right? You're not hiring a staff or?
Oh no, I don't want to. In my consulting for the last 5 years, I never hire a staff. I know everybody in the business, at least I know in this area. And when I need expertise, I pick up the telephone and I say, I got a job, I'll split with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I do 50-50, I don't like it at all. And this is what I can bring, and this is what I expect that you can bring. I think we can make this in a much more of a talk. And I show them everything, and we go and talk to the guy, but
yeah.
I can think of the guy doing. And they're good. They're all good people. I only get good people. And so that's the way that goes.
Well, I've certainly taken up plenty of your time.
The last part of this we're not going to record. I mean, you record it, but I don't want you to spend any time with it.
Let's transcribe it and you see how you feel about it. Actually, this is historically, we're talking about recent times, but in terms of an information person dealing, that was a logical next step because that's where the future is.
Right, well, this for your recording, you still have it on?
Mm-hmm.
It's happy recording. Remember, I always talked about the three C's.
Right.
Computer, communications, mm-hmm. and content.
I read that article.
Yeah, and I had those three things, and this was communications.
Yeah, right.
And that's what was attractive to me.
So I mean, finally you were putting all three of them together.
Well, and I thought that I was going to be able to bring content into the system. There's a lot of money in content because that's where the money's going to be.
Right.
It's going to be in content. And your carriers, in many ways, they're going to make money, don't misunderstand. But your carriers, in many ways, are going to be like service providers today.
More. The carriers may end up controlling the content,
right,
and doing it all.
The money, database providers, if they work it right, may be able to make some money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the secondary publishers have real problems because primary publishers now have certain capabilities they didn't have before.
Right, right.
Okay?
Yeah, the web being powerful.
And so their role may get modified, and they're going to have to do some fast jumping, which they can do. Much changing.
By way of final things, I was reminded when I looked at your resume and particularly what's listed in the Who's Who of that thing that was said about George Bush, that no one ever had a better resume to be president. Looking at your resume, it looks like to me no one ever had a better resume to deal with the issues of information management.
Well, I was very fortunate.
And
I was very fortunate. I don't regret anything that I did. The only thing I regret is, you know, it was a failure. It wasn't my fault, but it was a failure. And I'm very happy with that. But the, you know, I've had a good life and a charmed life. Every job I was on, I took chances. Now, I'm not a risky gambler until I get into communications deal. But, and I do my homework. On this, I probably didn't do as much homework as I should have. I've worked with some wonderful people who have made me look good. I've been fortunate in being able to attract some good people, and I've had some great teachers. I've learned from every experience, the failures as well as the successes, and you can learn so much from failures.
Who do you consider your central teachers besides Thompson?
A man down at Oak Ridge was a man by the name of Carl Holmes. Carl Holmes was in charge of our publications program down there. I was 26, 27 years old. I knew from nothing. when I look back, I didn't know anything. I knew my job, which was very limited in those days, don't misunderstand. Carl was an old cudgemudgeon. I mean, he was a perfectionist. He was an artist. He was an editor. He could do all that stuff. Tough on people, but boy, could he produce. And he did by example. And I learned from Carl. I watched Carl. I don't handle people the way Carl does. I do things differently because we're all different. And Carl, I thought, was a little tough on people. But I learned from Carl so much that he didn't realize he was teaching me. And he taught me. He was a man who made a living doing artwork for ads for International Harvester. And all of a sudden, he's in the publication business. And he says, let me tell you something. He said, I used to do ads for International Harvester.